Welcome to Star Wars Celebration, everybody. Star Wars Celebration on the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. I've lined up a Jedi Council here of amazing guests. First, introduce myself. I am Chris Gore, sometimes known on the internet as That Chris Gore, and I am a longtime Star Wars fan. Some of you know my work on FilmThreat.com. You also maybe saw me on G4 TV on Attack of the Show, where I was on there for 8 years talking about DVDs. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to have a career and a job that allows me to cover geek stuff, which is a blast. So I feel very lucky for that. And I just started a new job at a company called Gemmer.com. That's G-E-M-R.com. It's a website for collectors where you can display your collection and sell your cool stuff online. So you guys can actually follow me on Gemmer. I'm That Chris Gore on That Chris Gore on everything. So I'm That Chris Gore on Gemmer, and you can actually see my Star Wars collection and my Batman collection, collection of antique cameras, and it's a blast. Want to introduce here, well, I should allow some of the people here to introduce themselves, except for Charlie. We talked about this. Charlie's demand, if he was going to be on this panel, was that I would do proper introductions.
So he never does proper introductions, and it's always very embarrassing to hype yourself up. So I'm saying just you do
well,
the hype.
I'm happy to hype you because I do it all the time. Let me introduce Patty Hawkins here. Say hello to Patty. Patty is a comedian, a host, an actor. He hosts many events if you go to conventions all across the country, and you've interviewed some of the luminaries in the world of geekdom and conventions.
I've done a fair amount, and I've done some voiceover work. I've actually done some Star Wars voiceover work.
Are you allowed to talk about that?
I'm allowed to say that I do what's called scratch tracks for Star Wars characters at the Disney attractions. I'm just not allowed to say which character it is.
And you may have done a golden droid.
Maybe. The whole point is I'm in a studio for 5 hours and I read the lines various ways, and then eventually they turn around and the real actor who is known for that role is hearing my reading of it and says it in his own way.
Cool. Let's talk about Carly Baker. Round of applause for Carly.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Carly is a recent convert to Star Wars, which is why her inclusion on this panel, I think, is really important. Carly Baker can also be heard on Robot Chicken. She's one of the voice actors on Robot Chicken. You can also, if you look up her volume of credits on IMDb, she's appeared in television shows, Femme Fatales. She's also appeared in many films. And if I had IMDb in front of me, I would be listing all of those, but you can look up Carly Baker and you can follow her at The Real Carly Baker.
Not That Carly Baker.
Yes.
But The Carly Baker.
The Carly Baker, and her Instagram is one of my favorites.
Oh, lots of sexy pictures. That's all I do.
And also want to introduce Charlie De La Zarica, who is a lifelong nerd, filmmaker. You can find his independent movie, Crave, on Blu-ray. He's also affiliated with probably some of the greatest DVDs ever produced. He also produced the Blade Runner Final Cut, which is the, in my opinion, best version of that film that exists. There's a 3-hour documentary on that DVD.
Three and a half hour
that is spectacular if you want to learn about everything Blade Runner. And before Charlie and I met, I didn't even know when I was on Attack of the Show, I would be reviewing DVDs that Charlie produced, which were always my favorite DVDs. Even if the movie wasn't great, Prometheus is one of the ones that comes to mind where I didn't love the movie, but I love that DVD just for all the extras on it. And
I don't think anybody loved Prometheus, but that's okay.
Charlie and I became friends after I discovered, like, hey, my shelf has a lot of your DVDs. And Charlie's a filmmaker in his own right and a lifelong nerd, and we hang out at conventions and have some in-depth conversations about film often, which we want to bring to you via this recording. So I want to thank all of you for being here. Wow, we're actually getting a good crowd.
Woo!
Yeah.
So let's kick this off. This is Pod Crash with That Chris Gore, and we're crashing the Film Threat podcast. So if you listen to film, this is actually the Film Threat podcast, but through a weird snafu with the Celebration folks, they listed it as Pod Crash. But I want to talk about, ask everyone on the panel, starting with Charlie, and we'll work our way down. Tell me about your first time. Tell me about the first time you saw Star Wars, because I think for a lot of people, that is a moment that we all remember.
Well, I remember it was opening weekend. It was May 25th. It was the Friday of 1977. And my dad took me to the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, which was like ground zero for Star Wars, you know, kind of pop culture explosion. And I had this really interesting vague memory of being out in the courtyard outside the Chinese where they have lobby cards, like photos from the movie. And keep in mind, this is 1977. They had a photo up from the throne room scene at the end of the film with Han and Luke walking down the aisle with Chewie behind them, which is like a mega spoiler nowadays. You'd never put like a shot from the final scene of the movie on a photo outside. But I, as a kid, I had no inkling of what I was about to see, but I thought, man, like those guys have been captured by that hairy guy, and that hairy guy is taking to be back to his leader. Like I had this whole other idea of what that story was going to be. So needless to say, seeing that film opening day at the Chinese, and just the hit of the John Williams score just immediately just blew my brain up. I feel like I was permanently scarred in the best possible way that day. And I couldn't think of anything else for weeks and months and years, and 40 years later, I'm still thinking about it. I'm still in love with Star Wars. And I spent that whole summer of 77 drawing Millennium Falcons and Stormtroopers and writing little short stories and just sculpting. I was like creating stuff. Like before I wasn't creating anything. I was just enjoying being a kid. And Star Wars made me want to create, which was just such an amazing feeling to have.
I actually want to skip Carly because I think she has a great story to put a button on everything and go right to Patty if you don't mind.
Not at all. Okay, is Indiana. It was in their ear. I geeked out when I saw the first TV commercial for it. And I just saw a laser flex, and I saw this gold robot running across the screen, and I saw explosions, and I ran to the TV room, and I ran to my mom, losing my mind. And I want to say her and my father were entertaining some friends, and she was like, "Oh yeah, I know that one. I'll talk to you about it later." Like, what? And then she pulled out, I think it was Time magazine. And she laid it out to me. She said, "Here's some pictures of that thing." And I was going through it. And I was like, I saw the storm. She, "Oh, those guys. Like, those are the bad guys. Like, they are? Oh, wow." And so I had, you know, pre-hype had already gotten to me. And I guess at that point, I already decided whatever direction this was going to go into, I was going to love it. and then to the movie, and then immediately going on home, running around with toy guns, and I had my cowboy outfit on, but I imagined I was Han Solo, and just zipping around from there. And my relationship with Star Wars has been like a very, very long marriage. Maybe a little bit of the spark has faded away, but I can't imagine my life without it.
Wow. That's great, Patty. I was a lifelong nerd, right? And at the time, this is sort of the dark times, I remember recording audio from movies that I liked. So on television, everything from Planet of the Apes TV episodes and whatnot. And during a late night, I believe it was...
Please tell me this is on a reel-to-reel.
Oh, no, yes, it is. So I would just record TV shows and then listen to them back, or movies that I liked, because I wanted to hear the music. I wanted to re-experience that. But I remember watching, it was a weird, like Flash Gordon, they would play late night. And there was a first commercial I saw for Star Wars. And I remember thinking, oh my God, because I was a big monster fan, the Wolfman is in this movie. I cannot wait to see the Wolfman, one of my favorite characters from monster movies. The Wolfman is in it. And I didn't see it on that Friday, but I did see it on the Saturday after it opened. My mother dropped me off. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, in the suburbs. My mom dropped me off at the Americana Theater. And me and a buddy of mine went to see it. And I remember it was in Dolby Sound, which was a big deal, Dolby Sound. And it was from one of the that moment of that first shot with the Star Destroyer where I'm actually looking behind me to see, like, when does this end, right? It just seemed to go on forever. And that was it. And I just remember the euphoria from that was like a drug. I mean, it was incredible. And like Charlie, had the same experience of just wanting to be creative, wanting to make movies, but also find out. It was the first time where I had seen something where I wanted to know, well, who did that? Who made this? And what was great about the marketing at the time is George Lucas really spread the love around. You know, it wasn't all focused on, here's the visionary director, which they did talk about George, but here's the producer, and here's the actors. Here's the John Dykstra who did the effects, and here's this person who did that, and the model builders. He really did credit so many people. It's this giant group effort. And just learning about that, I bought every magazine that I could get my hands on, Starlog, Famous Monsters, and needed to know everything about the making of Star Wars.
Uncle Forey jumped on Star Wars so fast.
Oh, yeah.
And so hard. Because nobody else would.
Exactly. And I remember buying a copy of Famous Monsters magazine because they had information about Star Wars 2, which was going to come out. And what was, I think, really fun about seeing Star Wars then was how unsophisticated everything was in terms of the marketing and whatnot. They really didn't know how to market. I think today, almost my experience of Star Wars, I love being here with you. I love being at the convention. I like talking at the bar and hanging out. I like anticipating the new trailer. I can't wait for the new trailer. I love everything about Star Wars. And the movie's sort of like, there's the movies. But the experience and how it has brought us all together, I think, is something I enjoy maybe today better than the films themselves.
A minor side note, isn't it nice that when you talk about figuring out how to market, isn't it nice that this week Marvel finally figured out how to market a Thor movie?
Yeah, that Thor trailer is insane cool. But Carly, you had a very different experience coming to Star Wars for the first time, and I want to hear that story.
Yeah, mine was extremely different from all of these gentlemen.
Gentlemen?
Well, some of these gentlemen. I grew up in a household where neither of my parents were that floored by Star Wars or anything Star Wars related.
And can I interrupt for 1 second? You were born after the original trilogy had come and went, like you were born after Jedi.
And I think that hurt it too, that it wasn't a new, exciting thing when I was really little, that, you know, it wasn't something that was in theaters that people wanted to take their kids to because it had just passed, and it wasn't old enough yet to be something that people wanted to, you know, take their kids to have the same experience they had as a kid. And so I was 14 years old when The Phantom Menace came out in theaters, and I had a really cute boyfriend who was a year older than me, and he was a huge Star Wars nerd, which is a trend in my life. And he took me to see The Phantom Menace in theaters on opening weekend, and I was so hopelessly confused. And the second that people came on screen, I said, well, who's that guy? Who's that guy? And he got so angry with me within 5 minutes. He was like, Carly, shut up. You can't talk during this movie. And so I just decided in my head, okay, screw Star Wars. This is terrible. I'm never watching another one of these. And I had that attitude my entire rest of my life until I met this guy over here. And he tried to explain to me how much he loved it. And I said, I'm not interested in watching them. I don't want to. And then he somehow convinced me to watch the despecialized versions of all of the original.
Yeah, when it happened, that's a great boyfriend, the despecialized versions.
Yeah, just so you know, we just got engaged not too long ago, so you just understand. It was basically because of The Force Awakens, because Chris and I went to an early screening of Force Awakens on the Disney lot, and I knew that I was going to have to take Carly to see it, but she had not seen really
anything
of them, like all the way through. So they were having screenings of the despecialized versions of the original trilogy at AFI. And so we had watched Star Wars on our own, but then we watched Empire and Jedi at AFI with a crowd, which was so much fun, especially people who love the original versions, who applaud when Sebastian, you know, Shaw shows up at the end as Anakin instead of Hayden Christensen. It's like that type of old school mentality was kind of fun to enjoy. But that's how you got to see
it,
to power through before Force Awakens.
Yeah, and it was totally different than what I thought it would be, since my only experience prior to that was watching basically half of The Phantom Menace and then checking out for the whole other half of it because I was just like, this is stupid and terrible and I hate it. I had this idea in my head that the Star Wars movies were going to be like sci-fi and boy stuff and it was going to be something that I wouldn't like at all. And I was so kind of floored and pleasantly surprised when I got to watch them for the first time and I saw how fun they were. I didn't think they were going to be fun. And they were like so fun, so...
Just for my clarification, your then boyfriend that took you at 14.
Yes.
When he told you to hush up, was that because you were annoying him, or was he afraid that you were going to get lynched by all the other fans in the theater?
It was purely because I was annoying him. It was okay. that was 100% of it, and that was.
You're
going to
get us killed, man.
No, that was the end of our relationship. I think that was maybe the last date that we went on because I was like, he's so mean. He won't explain every single character to me.
So, how many people here own Star Wars toys? Anyone? So that's everyone. Everyone on the panel, everyone in this room. It's not a surprise. But what I want to talk about is Star Wars then and now on various different levels. And first, I want to talk about the toys then. I think we all remember the dark times. The Christmas of 1977, when there were no Star Wars toys. I mean, there was Star Wars merchandise, but it was so cheap. It was mostly rebranded stuff where they would just take and put a Star Wars sticker on it. It would be the Star Wars slide projector.
Yeah.
And just the lamest stuff that you could possibly imagine for Star Wars toys. But what they did have that Christmas, which I got, was the Star Wars Early Bird Kit, which was your opportunity to get this piece of cardboard, right, that opened up into a kit which had a couple stickers, and it had this coupon that you could mail in the mail to get Star Wars figures in June of 1978. And I still have my Space Club card from that Early Bird kit, which I carry in my wallet. It didn't get me in the convention, unfortunately. but Star Wars toys then were really unsophisticated. And if you were lucky enough to send your coupon in early, you would have received the Luke Skywalker with the telescoping lightsaber, right? Which is worth, I don't know, $3,000 now? Insane. So
I think I used it as dental floss.
But I remember buying everything in those early days, right? It was unsophisticated. They didn't know that what the marketing was going to be. They didn't know that this was going to be a hit, right? And so they didn't have it that Christmas. So I want to talk to everyone on the panel about their Star Wars collecting. And Carly, you can address, you know, things that you've purchased today. And just talk about, no, I'm serious. Like, because, I mean, we've been to so many conventions together and hung out. But we'll go with Charlie and work our way this way. Charlie, your experience buying Star Wars stuff in the early days, and then what do you buy now?
I mean, early days was identical to yours. I mean, I bought that Early Bird kit. I stared at it for months, waiting for the figures to show up in the mail. And actually, I ordered, every time Kenner offered a sneak peek figure, I always ordered it right away, like the Boba Fett, and then later with Jedi, it was Admiral Ackbar, and then like the Emperor came out at some point, Bossk was the second Empire sneak peek figure. So I was always getting those sneak peek figures because I just had this insatiable like hunger to have the next cool bit of plastic that Kenner was putting out. And I, for the longest time, through the early years, through my teens, my bedroom was a shrine to Star Wars. I mean, if you can imagine, like a tiny version of Rancho Obi-Wan, Steve Sansweet's place, just jammed into this 15-year-old's room. It was like a store. Like, and I kept the stuff in boxes pretty early on because it's not that I didn't want to play with them. It's just that I worshipped them so much. I coveted them. Like, it was like the Holy Grail, you know, having it on my shelf. So. I think as early as like 1979, I realized this stuff is worth more in the box, which is, you know, that goes to the I think the premise of Toy Story 2, right, where you should take the toys out of the box and you should enjoy them. But I just, for some reason, collected them like they were in a museum. But I just had everything. And then there were the dark times after Jedi when things started to fade. But then 2 years later, they came out with this thing called Power of the Force, which is a whole new series of figures and toys, which I was super excited about, thinking that, oh man, that must mean there's a new series of movies coming out, and they weren't.
But you got those shiny coins.
And then Droids and Ewoks hit TV, the animated show, and there are new toys for that. again, it was like kind of a, it was like limping along for many years.
Treading water. That's
yeah, treading water until like 95 when they came out with the new figures, the super muscular Herculean looking Luke Skywalkers and things like
Buff
that.
Buff Luke.
Yeah, which again, it was like false hope every single time. Like, oh, there's going to be a new wave of Star Wars to enjoy with the toys, and there wasn't until 99. So.
And they really thought those He-Man style. They really thought that's what. The collectors wanted, and they, in a rare display of contrition, they actually apologized at the time. They actually came out and said, hey, we're sorry, we're going to start making, you know, we're going to give Luke his little boonie hat, promise, you know. Yeah.
So, but in terms of, like, what I collect now, I mean, I this goes back to even, like, even the 80s or 90s. I also, very early on, started collecting cast and crew apparel from the movies. I have a lot of shirts and jackets and caps that the cast and crew on the films had. I mean, My most prized possession is a real Blue Harvest shirt from Return of the Jedi with two call sheets that came with it. And keep in mind, I got those call sheets in 82, like a full like year before Jedi came out, and it had Ewoks listed on the call sheet. And I'm thinking, man, if the internet was around back then, like the super top secret creature of the new movie would have been all over the place because that stuff was out. So I was really enjoying having like that sort of inside like connection to the film. And so yeah, I've got like a ton of cast and crew stuff that in addition to all the other toys and posters and albums and everything else, you know.
It's interesting how like the collecting's changed. One of my favorite things that I still have from when I was a kid is a die-cast Millennium Falcon that's about this big and it's covered in dirt and I have never cleaned it. I mean, it was in the mud and dirt and I still have it with the original 1970s dirt on it. But I'm different about the way I collect now. I buy far less things, but I like to think I buy better, more interesting things. I've got a Luke's lightsaber prop replica that I'm really proud of that I put on display. I bought an Admiral Akbar sushi set with chopstick, which at a couple celebrations ago. So I like to buy stuff that, and this is the thing that I like to get now, is things that are functional. So it's like, you know, if I'm going to get a new cutting board for my kitchen, it can be a Millennium Falcon cutting board. You know, so I think like home goods and high-end stuff. So Patty, what about you collecting then and now? And we'll get to Carl.
That Christmas, I too was an early bird collector. I got two things that Christmas. I got the early bird kit, and I got the Guns of Navarone Army playset, which was a staple of being a boy in the 70s. And that's also a very interesting turning point, too, I think about the way Star Wars is morphing and changing everything. The toys themselves, they were like, yeah, you didn't care. You didn't care that they were junky and primitive and basically these non-articulated dolls because it was the best thing you had about Star Wars, which always made me lament. If I could go back in time, one of the things I would slap Mego around and I would say, get the Star Wars license. And I'm not saying that the world would be better or worse, but it would have been nice to have them compatible with the Star Wars, the superhero figures of the time.
Someone has to on the internet do Mego custom Star Wars figures. Because I thought the Mego figures were lame. I bought the Batman and Robin that had the plastic gloves that always
ripped. The big mittens.
The big mitten gloves. They were just the Mego figures I thought were terrible. But I would love to see somebody make some Star Wars Mego figures.
But I always wanted to, you know, I always wanted to fanfic toys and cross the streams and the universes. And coming to this now, finally, the Star Wars... I'm a big 6-inch action figure collector, DC, Marvel Legends, that whole thing. And now I finally can do it. Now I finally, with the Hasbro's like DC Harvest Black series, it's nice, good quality, 6-inch sized. And yeah, I've got Captain America kicking the crap out of Stormtroopers. I've got Doctor Doom and Darth Vader staring each other down, you know, fighting on a psychic plane. You know, it's like I've got all these goofy things in my head, and I get to play them out, you know, completely at my pleasure. So I'm 40 something years old, and I'm finally able to play with the toys like I wanted to when I was six.
And technically speaking, the Disney-Marvel crossover is completely possible. The Marvel-Star Wars crossover is possible because of Disney owning both properties.
Which I actually... I know it could happen, but I would be okay if it never did. That's just me personally, just because I'm like... That's an unexploded bomb that I think is best left alone. But in 10, 15 years, I could see them resorting to it.
Carly, you're wearing a Star Wars shirt at a Star Wars convention. What Star Wars stuff do you like to get?
Honestly, I feel like the stuff that I usually gravitate towards toward, and I probably shouldn't say this, is the stuff that's not like the officially sanctioned Star Wars merchandise. Oh, oh, you know, I like stuff that, you know, that people create, that that's kind of their version of this universe and their own interpretation. For example, I was just in Mexico a few months ago visiting my grandparents, and there was a guy that was selling these all of these little figures and stuff that were made out of scrap metal and old bolts and stuff like that. And he had this phenomenal Millennium Falcon that was like, it's like this big around. It's pretty huge.
7 pounds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's pretty massive. And he made it, you know, he made it with his hands, and it was this really cool thing. And, you know, and of course, and so I bought it and I brought it home to Charlie, as a sorry you didn't get to hang out on the beach in Mexico with me present. And, you know, and it was just, it was so cool because, of course, it wasn't super, super authentic. You know, there were some things in the wrong places, but it was just, it's that kind of stuff that really kind of gets to me. And then finding T-shirts and stuff that aren't really official Star Wars T-shirts, but that, you know, are some kind of a cool in-joke or something about the universe that George Lucas has let slip through the cracks and not gotten mad at those people yet. So
I love that. I love that too. Like people that create the, you know, custom T-shirts, or, you know, I think we've all seen the Your Snoke Theory Sucks shirts, or stickers that are floating around. I love the
Leia with Snoke. I'm telling you, it's Leia, you know.
But just all those, all that, like it really just fosters creativity. So now let's talk about the trailers then and now. I remember when there was the first trailer for The Empire Strikes Back. Charlie, do you want to talk about it? Because I'm sure you and I had a very similar experience. What? When we knew that there was going to be a trailer for the new Star Wars, which before it was called Empire, before we knew it was Episode 5, we all referred to it as Star Wars 2.
That's an interesting period of time, actually, the pre-Empire months, even the year before it was, because the very first teaser, I believe, was actually made of just Ralph McQuarrie paintings. It was just actually just like really fast cuts with music to McQuarrie paintings. And then they, Kenner and Fox and Lucasfilm figured out a way to like get people back in theaters was through toys as well. So you'd have a new trailer for Empire, the very first trailer for Empire that actually had footage from the movie. And you'd get a booklet with the new Kenner toys that were coming out. So like kind of like, you know, the synergy of the two things at the same time. But the posters would say that. It would say, you know, have Star Wars back in theaters for 2 weeks only or whatever. See the coming attractions for The Empire Strikes Back and some kind of Kenner promotional thing.
They'd also be on the back of the packaging too.
Yeah.
Luke and Bespin Fatigues, which I couldn't, because I couldn't read Fatigues at the time.
But no, my favorite like pre-release Empire trailer is the one that some of you, I'm sure, have seen. It is the one that Harrison Ford actually narrates like he's completely on coke. I mean, he's like completely, it's like super fast, like, on Solo, you know, Chewbacca. He's like he's speaking.
And really aliens
fast.
From a thousand galaxies. Yeah, yeah. It's like he's trying to disguise his voice so he doesn't sound like Harrison Ford at all.
But every once in a while, he kicks into that slower Harrison Ford drawl, and it's just like, they got Harrison to just step in for a second, do the narration, and they kept it, you know? So that was a really funny trailer. But like those early images of Empire where you're trying to figure out what does this mean for the story. and just like seeing, like, for instance, like just rapid cuts of Vader in his meditation chamber. You're like, what the hell is that? And then like cutting to like ships taking off or something. You think, oh, that must be like a pod that he's flying in. It's like, well, no, that's not it at all. But the thing is cut so fast, your childish imagination is trying to piece this all together. It was really intoxicating to like see any new imagery, which is why I can't wait for tomorrow.
really like the debut of a new Star Wars trailer is like the debut of a big new blockbuster movie. We're all going to get to see pieces of it. I think one of the reasons it's so satisfying is they're so good about being secretive. Even though I love spoilers, I don't care. I love to read them. I love to think about them. It doesn't ruin the experience of the movie for me. I love spoilers. I think another momentous like trailer debut back then was also Return of the Jedi, or as it was known, Revenge of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the theater to see, we knew the Revenge of the Jedi trailer was going to be on a particular movie, and it was, oh my God, it was insane. Do you want to talk about that, Patty? Like,
To back up just a little bit on Empire Strikes Back, the thing that started cementing that it was happening to me was the Boba Fett mail-in premium. Send in 5 proof of purchases and shipping and handling, and you got a single Boba Fett, and I think my mom to this day still talks, I'll never forget the day that damn doll came on in and you were doing cartwheels and that. And again, we didn't know what he was. I think they had said he was a bounty hunter, and then it took me a bit to realize, oh, that's the dude from the holiday special, which we may or may not talk about. But the whole thing about that was what got me excited. And my biggest regret, though, about Empire was that as a kid, I had no discipline, self-control. I read the whole comic book Marvel adaptation before it came out. And if I could go back in time, I would definitely slap myself to prevent me from doing that.
I didn't do that, but I did read the Jedi comic adaptation. I could not wait.
I avoided it because I screwed the boosh myself on Empire. Yeah. I specifically, I thumbed through it slightly, but I left it at that.
Yeah.
Now, how did Star Wars, in terms of those trailers, affect you, Carly? Like, you knew it had to be in the zeitgeist, or just out in the ether, being like, what were you, 14 when?
I was like a teenager when the prequels came out, and.
You had to see like all your friends in school were kind of.
Sure, and I had a little brother that was 8 years younger than me, and he was, you know, he didn't really understand what was going on, but he wanted to see it all, and he wanted to own it all, and he had, you know, any toy he could get his hands on, and that was, I remember he used to play the pod racing video game all the time on his, like, Sega or whatever it was, you know, and
he was would constantly. Actually, it was the Nintendo 64.
There you go. Just, yeah. You know, but yeah, it was, I think I was in a weird kind of age group for all of it. Now I'm super pumped as an adult, you know, when all this stuff is coming out now, and that's great. But being a 14-year-old girl that had no prior experience with it, it was just something that I said, oh, this is boy stuff. This is, you know, but for kids that were younger than me when the prequels were coming out, it was a really big deal.
Well, one of the things about the prequels, we can sit here and argue about the merits of them. There's a documentary I recommend that you guys all see. This is a mini DVD Tuesday. You should see a documentary called The Prequels Strike Back. It's sort of an answer to the documentary, The People vs. George Lucas. I'm actually in both documentaries. That's not why I'm plugging them. But what's,
yes, it is.
A little bit. But The Prequels Strike Back is really fascinating because it was made by... I don't remember the director's name, but it's a kid from Austin, Texas, who was a single-digit age kid when the prequels came out, loved the Star Wars prequels, and then when he became a teenager, read the internet and didn't realize that there was a whole generation of people who disliked the prequels. So the film really did like make me have a new appreciation for the prequels, but the one thing that you can't criticize the prequels for are the trailers. Every trailer, I think, for the Star Wars prequels, to me, blew my mind, especially the first one. I think that, what was the movie?
Waterboy.
Was it Waterboy?
The Siege had it. I remember The Siege had it, and I forgot what else. But yeah, people would line up to see those movies just to see the trailer. And they'd show it twice. They'd show it before and after the movie.
So we all went, and I remember what's weird is going to a theater knowing it was going to be playing on that screen and seeing people I didn't coordinate with. This is before the internet and Facebook and all this.
Well, it was on the cusp of it. The deal was that there were some people that had ripped it, and you could AOL proto-download it and stuff.
That was later that day, because I remember going to the theater and seeing like, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm seeing like friends that I knew that we were all like, you know, Star Wars fans, right? And like, but there was no coordination because this is previous to social media being a way to connect us all. But seeing it and then rushing home and waiting hours for it to download the cam version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever listened to Pablo Hidalgo's talks on Star Wars, it's Pablo Hidalgo from Lucasfilm. He sort of carries the torch for all Star Wars pop culture history. He'll tell the story that after that bootleg trailer like made its way all over the internet, Apple approached Lucasfilm and said, "Hey, you know, we could probably put those trailers up on iTunes for you." And that's where that whole debuting trailers on iTunes, that's where that came from. Is that you know, cam version kind of you know, created that. So what does everyone feel about our trailer anticipation for tomorrow, where the Last Jedi trailer is going to debut? Any thoughts?
It's funny because like so little has gotten out about this film. At this point last time, we had a trailer for Force Awakens, we've seen tons of photos and art. It's like there's already a sense of what the movie is starting to look like. And here, aside from all the spy photos that have leaked out on Last Jedi, I have no sense at all what we're going to see tomorrow. Although today, if you guys saw the Star Wars 40th anniversary panel, there was a tiny little hint of Rian Johnson and Carrie Fisher on set of Last Jedi. So there was a little tiny bit of that, but that's all. Like, other than that, I imagine it'll be yet another fantastic trailer, because that's what those guys do.
Now let's talk about Star Wars fandom then and now. There was no fandom in the early days. In terms of a organized Star Wars, I mean, Star Trek was far more mobilized. And I remember that at the time, I remember going to comic book shows. And I recall growing up in Detroit, going to the Detroit Auto Show. And here's the room where you drop off your kids, where they have comic books, and they're showing 16 millimeter prints of episodes of Star Trek and Doctor Who. So fandom wasn't particularly sophisticated at the time. I don't remember going to a Star Wars specific show, but I do remember going to San Diego Comic Con and seeing Steve Sansweet, you know, talking about Star Wars. And I remember getting in a lot of trouble when they were just like, everything that Lucasfilm would show you at a convention would be really, here they would show you the logo for the Star Wars gaming group as if we were supposed to be excited. And I remember like posting on social media like, 7, 8, 9, just make episode 7, 8, 9. George Lucas promised he was gonna make 7, 8, 9. It was supposed to be 9 movies, 3 trilogies, 7, 8, 9. I don't care about a new toy or a new cartoon show or this, 7, 8, 9. And I was working at G4 at the time, and all these people like on the crawl were saying, 7, 8, 9, I agree with Gorg, 7, 8, 9. They should make more movies, 7, 8, 9. I remember getting so much trouble because I feel that's the way I felt. Like, just make more movies. I don't care, like, the adjunct stuff and you know, the fact that they wiped away all of the extended universe stuff is kind of telling. But talk about fandom, like how you experienced it when you were younger and shows that you went to, as opposed to now where it's really sophisticated. Or let's say it's gotten much better. Anyone was at Denver in 1999, the very first Star Wars celebration, which basically the terrain was cosplaying as Dagobah. It rained the entire time, and everything was intense outdoors. We were all covered in mud in our shoes. Anthony Daniels was working the line, saying hi to people. So even though we were being rained on, it was ill-planned, and it was a complete mess. Everyone was just so happy to be there and know that a new Star Wars movie was coming out. But I'd like to hear everyone on the panel, your experience of going to conventions the way it used to be and how it's changed up to now, where it's really sophisticated, although they still can't seem to fix this thing of people spending the night to go see a panel.
The biggest thing about Star Wars when it first hit was that it completely skipped the cult thing and went straight to a massive pop culture arising.
That's interesting, because Star Trek was really free. If you were into Star Trek, you were you know, off the beaten path.
Yeah, most of the fandom, the fanatic thing, really sort of stemmed off from, okay, something that just had a moment and was extinguished before it reached its apex. Star Wars being something that adults look curiously and every kid in America went ballistico over, it was interesting to be in a fandom that was really on the verge of like almost like a sports franchise fandom. You know, with that type of awareness. And again, and Star Wars has always had a weird thing. It's a part of geekdom, but it's only got one foot in the geekdom door. Like, I've met plenty of Star Wars fans that are like, I'm not a geek, man. I'm a Star Wars fan. We're normal, you know? And that's not an admonishment or anything else. It's just how the perspective, and really, I think how society still kind of feels about it. I mean, like, Star Wars is a Beatles, an Elvis. It's your local sports franchise. And curiously enough, Star Wars had a presence at the early conventions, but at the conventions, there was always a guy as Skywalker, there was always a guy as Vader, but really I saw more of the disenfranchised. I saw more Star Trek. I saw the early days of Doctor Who fandom. I saw the occasional comic book cosplayer long before cosplay was even a word. So it was there, and curious enough, I think the rest of fandom has tried to catch up. It'll never fully catch up to Star Wars, but I feel like the other fandoms have risen, where Star Wars has always been the mountain to aspire to.
I could see one day there being like a Marvel Con, right? I mean, that could exist. Charlie, what are your thoughts on this fandom then and now?
The first convention I ever went to, I think, was in 1980. And it was after Empire came out, though. And I remember, you have to understand, nowadays when you get like these lavish multimedia presentations, like a Comic-Con with like three giant screens and, you know, footage from the set that day, it's like ridiculous what we have now. Back then, you would have a publicist or even like one of the producers show up with a slide projector, and you would literally be like, click. Here's Yuma, Arizona, where we're building Jabba Sandbarge. Click. Here's, you know, whatever. And I remember the one that actually producer Howard Kazanjian did for Jedi, because it was packed. Like, you think this was packed? I mean, it was the same kind of craziness to see a slideshow. If you're lucky, you got like a little 16 millimeter featurette of some kind. But he would show like slide after slide, and every once in a while you'd get a new character, like Nia Num, say, and people go nuts. They have no idea who he is, but like, oh my god, it's a new character. And like, it was that like addiction to the next Star Wars thing that was so fun to see. And two things about that Jedi slideshow preview that I remember. One was people asked him, there's a Q&A, you could ask questions, and people ask Kazanjian, so is the Return of the Jedi, or then the Revenge of the Jedi soundtrack, going to be two albums, a double album, just like the original, the first two films were? And he said, no, it's probably going to be a single album. And everyone booed, like booed him directly. And then he said, but you can buy two records. And then like a double boo. It was like everyone was like so upset about it. I remember that. And then the other thing was, going back to my story about the call sheets from Blue Harvest and the Ewoks, I made a button. And again, hadn't seen the movie. It was still a year before Jedi came out. I made a button that just said the Ewoks of Endor on it. And I actually drew it in the Star Wars font. And I was wearing this button. And I was talking to Maureen Garrett, who was the president of the Star Wars fan club back then. And Howard had walked up. And they were talking. And I saw his eyes do this to my button. I swear, I thought he was going to literally kill me on the spot. Because, I mean, that was such a security breach to, like, have their top secret creatures, like, even known about. But the look on his eyes were like, I'll never forget the look on his eyes. It was like fire was coming out. He was so upset. But, yeah, it was kind of fun to go to those early sneak peeks. Because, again, it was so crude and so basic. Like, nowadays, no one would tolerate slide, you know. But then it was like, that's all we had. And I kind of missed the simplicity and kind of the naivete of those early days, because it was so easy to get excited about stuff. And now we're kind of blasé, like, oh, Last Jedi trailer, great, you know. So it's like,
I'm not
like,
blasé.
But watch, like within 30 seconds of that trailer going online, it's going to be analyzed and scrutinized, and every pixel of every frame is going to be, you know, discussed and just, you know, taken down and deconstructed. So,
but isn't that the internet's job, is to instantly like something and then trash it and hate on it and whatnot?
Well, speaking of hating, that's something else about the early days of fandom and conventions, is that there was the older generation at the time, which would be comparable to our age then, which there was a sizable amount of people that Star Wars, whatever. I mean, and that was back in the days at conventions when you could still buy novels. These were the guys going around with stacks of like, oh, I got a first edition, you know, Starship Troopers and blah, blah, blah. And if you use the word sci-fi around them, it's science fiction, you know? And I did experience that. I did experience, there were the older older neckbeards, for lack of a better term, that disdained Star Wars. And they're, well, I like Star Wars, but the first time I saw May the Force Be With You button, I was like, And it was palatable. It was there. And I saw a little bit of that when Harry Potter came along. I saw a little bit of my generation. I think we're like, oh, that's something that the kids are into. And I'm like, no, this is gold too. It's like, stop being a stick in the mud, you know? But there's a generational aspect.
But wait, was there something new now that we poo-poo? That we kind of like throw our noses up at? Like, what's the new version of that?
Twilight.
Yeah, maybe. DC Universe, but that's... I say about the DC Universe, they're one movie away from writing the ship, and we'll see if they get that right. I have high hopes for Wonder Woman.
You know what? I'll throw this out. There is a franchise. The Fast and the Furious. The Fast and the Furious, you can say what you want to about its fan base, that's eight movies, got a very strong following. It may not fall under the geek banner, per se, but... You gotta respect. Well, you don't have to like it, but you gotta respect its success.
A quick aside: my friend Matt Kyle, who's been on the Film Threat podcast before, has a great pitch. He wants to take the cast of the Fast and the Furious movies and mix it with the Transformers movies and just have them drive the Transformers cars and just combine those two franchises, which I actually think that would get me to another Transformers movie. That would actually be really fun to combine those franchises. But Carly, I want to talk to you about, you're new to fandom, and you've been at we've hung out at a lot of shows together. You guys have been together, you and Charlie, at shows. How coming to these conventions, like how do you see fandom? And also, you've done other panels, and with your work with Robot Chicken, you've been a part of that. I mean, you have fans yourself. I mean, your Instagram is a must follow.
So, back to the Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, I started going to Comic-Con in 2008, and so I have kind of a vastly different experience than you guys in terms of when I started going to Comic-Con. It was already a huge thing, and it was so commercialized, and it was so massive, and it was just, you know, everything was about the big studios and whatever huge films that they had coming out, and it wasn't, it didn't feel that geeky, you know. It was like you went there and it was very mainstream, and so it was kind of interesting for me because that's all I know with conventions is what they've kind of become, to hear people like you guys talk about how they used to be and how cool they used to be and how underground they used to be. And it makes me a little bit sad that I never got to experience that. Because all I know is, you know, I've been to Comic-Con every year from 2008 until now. And it's gotten, you know, it was really big then. It got a little bit bigger. And then there was this huge backlash that I feel like, you know, all of the people that loved Comic-Con for what it was hated what it had become. And it kind of had a weird internal crumbling that was kind of palatable for people like me that never knew what it was, but it was hard to put your finger on why it was like that and why people were so dissatisfied all of a sudden.
Because it became mainstream in the same way you're talking about Star Wars is instantly mainstream in a way. Comic-Con and a lot of like the kind of the more geeky subcultures, I think, were offended by the fact that it wasn't theirs anymore. It was for everybody, which is kind of a strange place to be. It should be for everybody.
Right.
It should be a universal appreciation.
But it's funny you mentioned 2008 because that's the year that a lot of people cite. I think that was the first year that the Twilight had a panel there. Mm. And that's when, because previous to 2008, seeing a woman at Comic-Con, it was like a Bigfoot sighting. It was like, oh my God, guys, there's a woman at Comic-Con.
And she's dressed like Vampirella.
And I think she's here on purpose. I think she's buying a comic. Because it would be, normally, a woman you would see at Comic-Con be like there because her boyfriend dragged her there, husband dragged her there. And it's like, no, there is, fandom is split 50-50 now. It is fully gender split. And that is, I believe, a good thing. Like, just as a father to a daughter who loves nerdy stuff, my daughter likes to brag that she's been coming to Comic-Con since she was a fetus, which is true. Her then pregnant mother came to Comic-Con, so, and she's been to everyone since. And I love the fact that it is mixed, and it's changed fandom, I think, in a good way. But 2008 was the tipping point where it really became not a nerdy dude's thing to go to. It was something that could be enjoyed by everyone. So I think that's a positive step forward.
The biggest thing that, again, I call us the direct market generation because we're like 70s, 80s kid. We kind of fostered comic book shops and stuff like that. The biggest thing I've always yelled at our generation of is that it's not so much you got to let go. You got to understand that we still have our circle. We still have just a little to go to. You can go find your experiences as it is. The expansion of the spectrum shouldn't really affect you. But I get why people are, when I was at San Diego in 2005, when I heard the announcement go, the Balls of Fury panel will be in 15 minutes. And I'm like, the ping pong movie? What? Okay. It's like, and I get it, but by the same token, it's kind of like, put away your anger and realize you've lost nothing. You really, really, we've really lost nothing as it is. And the inclusion and the ascension of geek culture, whatever you want to call it, does not take away from anything that you love or anything that you enjoy. But that's a big disconnect in a lot of people's minds.
Well, one of the things I love is, you know, how inclusive fandom has become, but seeing families with young kids. I mean, we had a young child in the hallway. But that, I love that. Like, I love when you see, like, a little girl or boy dressed as, like, a Jedi or an Ewok, or they're participating. And Star Wars is something that you pass on to your family. You know, you pass down. I really think it's... that is the thing I love the most. And I'm sure you two... on you're going to be married, and perhaps there are kids in the future, and you will pass on what you have learned. That, to me, is what I really love about fandom, is how inclusive it's become. It's not just this fringe, nerdy thing. Being called a nerd these days is like a badge of honor. We do have to wrap it up, but I want to end on talking about hope. When the original Star Wars film opened in 1977, it was not called A New Hope. It wasn't Episode 4. It was Star Wars. Simply Star Wars. And it was a year or more later that that George Lucas announced, no, it's actually Episode 4 of a 12-part series, and the title of the movie is A New Hope. So what I want to talk to everybody about is what your hopes are for Star Wars in the future. What is your hope for Star Wars going forward? Obviously, I don't think the movies are ever going to end. I think we'll actually see Episode 10 and even, you know, a fourth trilogy of stories. But I want to go down the line and start with Charlie, and we'll work our way. And what are your hopes for the future of Star Wars?
Well, I just hope that they can keep telling compelling stories with engaging characters, which goes back to the beginning. I mean, the love I have of that first experience with Star Wars, taking it back to the very beginning, I hope that they can keep following that path that George Lucas, you know, kind of created with the sense of the hero's journey, you know, and the sense of a one individual who can make a big difference in a huge universe. I mean, I love that story. I mean, when you look at the artwork sometimes of, like, again, going back to Ralph McQuarrie, that beautiful art of Luke holding a lightsaber. Actually, it's kind of similar to the shirt you're wearing now with Rey, where she has the Episode 7 version of it. But just the notion of this one lone person that can actually take on the universe and make a change. I hope for stories that are like that, regardless of who that individual is. And I hope that, you know, with all the various anthology Star Wars stories along the way, that we can see interesting kind of corners of the galaxy that we haven't seen before with great characters. It's interesting because if you think about it, the Star Wars universe does not have the deepest bench of main characters that you think it might have. I mean, Han Solo for sure, but then they're talking about, you know, maybe a Boba Fett movie, and are we going to get down to the Ugnaughts at some point? You know, it's like, yeah. How deep can they go in terms of these standalone movies? And I hope what they can do is actually use those movies to create new characters and introduce younger versions of characters that we already love to let it kind of blossom and bloom and create a much bigger, you know, universe than we've seen so far.
Cool.
I hope that the movies don't continue to be super, super dark, and that they keep that sense of fun that I feel like the original trilogy had. I think Rogue One was amazing, but it was really depressing. Like, it was super, super depressing, and it was dark, and, you know, and
you have to immediately watch Episode 4 after Rogue One.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, and it was amazing, and I was, you know, it was compelling, and I was into it, but I was just so depressed at the end of it, which I don't know that there could have been, you know, obviously there couldn't have been another ending, although I came up with a few in my head that I thought were phenomenal and would have been a lot more fun. But I really hope that, you know, in the movies that are coming out in the future, that they bring back that kind of sense of, like, fun and adventure, and everything isn't as dark or as super serious as I feel like the last two films have been. And so that's what I hope. I hope that they keep, you know, at least some diversity and tone to keep things light when they can be.
More BB-8.
I love BB-8.
Who doesn't?
More Ewoks.
About 9 months after the Disney Star Wars deal went down, and they just started making various announcements, at my green room at Disney, a very high-level Disney executive was doing the goodwill tour. Oh, you're all doing a great job, or whatever. And he was sort of hanging out and chilling, and then I sat down, just got done with the show, and he was like, oh, you're a Patty, right? Goes like, yeah. So I heard you're a big sci-fi guy. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. And he was like, so are you excited for Episode 7? And I was like, oh, well. And then he got nonplussed and sort of looked back like, you're not excited for it? And it was kind of like, wait, is there something that we should know? Because he had that executive, like a vision on and stuff. Here's the deal. I'm excited for Episode 7. I'm kind of scared about Episode 15.
Okay.
You know, and I said, because at the time, Disney was like, we're going to put a Star Wars movie out every year. And I thought, maybe they're pushing a little too fast. And they have eased up on that a little bit. Now it's like, okay, we got episode 7 out, we're done. Rogue One is the first of the one, so they're continuing the trilogy. So my hope is a greater diversity of just types of stories. I would like to see more standalones. I'd like to see going down the occasional Hobbit hole. I would like to see, they've made allusions that they're going to be back and maybe cherry pick some of the extended universe, which I was not a huge fan of, but I appreciate that their Thrawn has fans. I appreciate Mara Jade has fans. And if they could be brought into a new form just for them, I think that'd be a nice touch. So I think the new Star Wars movies now have a little bit of an agenda going on, and which is fine, which is absolutely fine. I feel like they're trying, okay, we need to do this, and we need to do this, and we need to do this. And once this dust settles, then I think that the sky's the limit. Now we're really going to see some dark stories. We can see some fun stories. We can see some just butt-kicking stories, you know? Just as... But I don't need to see prequels that are origins. I'd rather just see... I want a Han Solo, young Han Solo movie to be... They're in the cantina. He sits down with a couple drinks. This is the last of our money. We need to find a gig. We need to find it fast. I don't need to know Han Solo rescuing Chewbacca and the life debt and running away from the Imperial Academy, and I don't care. I want to go straight to the fun stuff. But well, that's just me.
On that note, I would say that I hope that to see more Star Wars that spurs our imagination. Because I don't necessarily agree that going back and showing the origins of things or the references to things, the best parts to me for Rogue One were, you know, seeing Gold Leader and all that, like all that referential stuff. But I hope we get beyond referencing stuff that we originally loved and find new things to love. I would rather see new planets that we've never seen before, not the planet of the grass and the trees. We've seen that kind of planet. Let's go to different worlds that are unworldly, something unlike we've ever seen. So my hope is that we'll see more originality in future Star Wars, and more than anything, I hope we see more Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Because I want to see Luke Skywalker speak. I feel a little disappointed with episode 7 because Luke, Han, and Leia will never be together again. Those three will never be reunited. It's not possible unless they decide to do some digital thing, which I hope that doesn't happen, or some flashback. But my hope is for more originality, more adventures, more fandom that brings us all together. More Luke, because at the beginning of Star Wars, if you look at that early novelization, which I purchased, the movie novelization of Star Wars, it said, from the adventures of Luke, from the Journal of the Wills, the adventures of Luke Skywalker. I want to know what the Journal of the Wills is, and I want to see more Luke. So I want to thank you guys for coming here to Star Wars Celebration to see the Film Prep Podcast. I want to thank my panel, Charlie DeLazarica, Carly Baker, Patty Hawkins. I'm that Chris Gore. Thank you, and let's get out of here.